Portland's favorite morning roast.
Who was the second hottest golden girl? Oh, you want to rank the hot golden girls?
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
If Blanche is number one,
was she the first TV cougar?
Ooh.
Andy Dirk Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
You're going to say Estelle. You're going to surprise me, and I'm not going to judge you for it. Estelle seems like she was probably wild.
Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. I hope your days are off to a fantastic start on a Monday.
Looks like P. Harris is in good mood.
P. Harris is in a good mood. The vibes are strong. We're ready to roll. He's getting ready for his big show. He likes when Sprague's out because he can come in and get everything set up early.
All situated.
The line change is a lot simpler when one of the hosts is not here.
Yeah, because you're starting a period.
You got access to it. You go pop over and take care of business, man. Lots to get to in this hour of radio. We'll see if we carve out some more time for the NFL. Might kick that to tomorrow. I have some fun with audio for you, and we will play that. But we do have. And look, here's what I will say. When you plan on doing a radio segment, something that you are reliant upon is them being on time. And I slotted this into the 9 a.m. segment,
well,
and thankfully...
You can rely on the AP.
They're not going to let you down.
No.
We do have.
There it is.
It is out, baby. The AP poll is out. The top 25 of college football in the AP. This is the poll they use. They don't use the coaches' poll. This is the poll that will be used until the college football rankings come out.
Until the selection committee starts ranking them. And I wish they would start doing it sooner.
So hold on. I got this up. I'm going to do one quick fun game with you. Okay. Oh. Before we read off the top 25 and where everybody falls.
I have it up as well.
I do too.
Okay.
How many teams from last year
do
you think started the year in the preseason top 25 and ended the season unranked?
Four.
Hold on. You think only four teams in the preseason top 25 ended the year unranked? Only four? Not in the top 10. In the top 25.
Yeah, I don't think it's as many as we think. And you're about to prove me wrong.
I am, yeah. You should have hinted at me counting there because I forgot to jot down how many.
Yeah.
12 is the number.
Wow.
12 of the top 25 ended the season unranked at the end of the year. So just keep that in mind as we go through. Here is your top 25. Your top 10 are as follows. Ohio State, number one. Nobody's giving us a chance. Oregon, number two. Georgia, number three. Notre Dame, number four. Texas, number five. Indiana, number six. Miami, number seven. Texas A&M, number eight. Ole Miss, number nine. Oklahoma, number 10. I'd be curious to pull up, how different is that, if at all, from the coaches' poll? Because now that we look at it and I read through it.
It seems really similar.
It seems nearly identical.
Nobody would be out of place. Maybe Ole Miss was higher on the coaches' poll.
Let me pull up my coaches' poll.
Maybe. There's one curiosity I have seeing this.
Okay.
I'll get to it. Or do you need me to... get to it now?
For some reason, I'm pulling up the coaches poll and it's giving me the FCS coaches poll on college football. And that's
not
not helpful at all.
Okay, let me see if NCAA.
Because just as I read that, it was like, that is very eerily similar. Okay, here we go. I think I got it. This is the coaches poll. Yes, coaches poll. Ohio State 1, Oregon 2, Georgia 3, Texas 4, Notre Dame 5, Indiana 6, Miami, A&M, Oklahoma, Ole Miss. So I think it's literally.
So Oklahoma and Ole Miss were flip flopped.
That was it.
That's
the only change. AP writers, what are we doing? Come on.
Okay. Well, my curiosity, though, is because they also have the first place votes in parentheses.
Ooh, yes. I did not see who got the most.
Ohio State, obviously, the most.
Right.
They have 40. Okay. Oregon, second with 14. Georgia, although they are ranked three, no first place votes.
Wow.
Notre Dame is fourth, but has six first place votes. So there's a lot of fluctuation about.
That's a big gap from Ohio State to everybody else.
Yeah. So Notre Dame, there's people that think based on their schedule that they, you know, will win or possibly there. Texas, no first place votes. See if you
good.
Detect
they don't deserve any.
Indiana, 8 first place votes, and there's some people that feel some voters feel they're the defending national champions until somebody beats them. They're the number one team.
I get it.
I understand the philosophy.
Yep.
Miami, 1 first place vote. No more. So the two SEC teams in the top 7 did not receive
not a
first
single.
Place vote.
Yeah.
Nor did A&M, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, LSU, which are the next 4 teams.
Right.
So what they're saying is, yes, the SEC is good top to bottom. We don't know who the best team in the SEC is going
to
be.
That's very – to see a gap that size between – it's not even just that my team's not the number one team. I'm glad they're not the number one team. 40 to 14, then to like 9-8 or whatever. Like, that's a huge gap for Ohio State. Now, Ohio State is certainly one of those programs that you can tell me all you want about how many guys they lost to the NFL. I also know that they recruited a top 2-3 level every year, and you're replacing those guys.
They stack 4 and 5
with guys who would be NFL players too.
Yeah.
So there's the experience.
Oregon starting to get to that level.
Right,
they are not at that level yet.
That was the argument I made last year, is that Oregon lost all their guys. They only returned a total of 3 starters, and people thought they're going to lose 4 games. And I said, that they're not. They recruited. They got a lot of talent here. Now, their experience or lack thereof might keep them from reaching the ultimate, and that's a fine argument. But the idea that you lose guys so you'll fall off, that's just laughable. It certainly is with Ohio State. They lost so many guys from that defense, and to be that overwhelming of a number one team, I will be honest, it's a little bit of a surprise to me. The Indiana boomer bust narrative, too, is fascinating. Where you probably are right, where some of the first place voters are just, you won the title, I'm leaving you there.
They won the title. But you're number one until you get beaten, and then when you get beat or you look crappy, then we'll slide you down based on what we see.
If you got that many first place votes and still ended up 6th in the preseason poll.
Yeah, there's a lot. So that means they came in 10th and 12th in some other votes.
Who has them out of the playoff losing
and
3 games this year.
I don't know when or where the individual, if they get posted, because it's the AP.
Oh, so they posted, yeah. Remember the gal who got, Brenna Green was one of them last year. She got killed for it. And we definitely take this too far. We've made fun of people on the show.
Yes.
Because there will be people who vote in the AP poll, and there will be a game that happened, and they are then turning in their ballot.
Right.
And somebody literally beats somebody, and they have a better, and then they won't move it or change it. And it's like, you didn't watch. Okay, that's a little challenging. Being an AP voter is still one of my all-time bucket list things in this industry. If I ever become a voter in the top 25, oh my God, I'm rubbing my nipples like Farmer Fran. But the boomer bust for Indiana, just it's very interesting because I would have guessed, if you would have asked me after the coaches poll was released, they had 2 different announcements that should have impacted where they moved, and that being the 5th year thing that was announced where you're now another year of eligibility. They got 2 of their best defensive linemen back, and that was already supposed to be a strength of their team. And so their defensive line's gotten only better and deeper in the last week and a half, and yet there's still people
voting
them out of the top 10.
Because it's a preseason poll, so at what point, I mean, some of these guys might have turned their votes in.
That's true. Maybe they turn them in early. I'm on vacation next week. That's a fair point. No doubt about it. I do want to play the fun game here in a moment of who are the teams, and I'll remind you, I'll go through the list of everybody who dropped off last year. A couple other tidbits here for people if you're curious. USC shows up at number 14.
Yep.
Washington shows up at number 17. And then of Oregon State note, you will now be playing the number 23 team in the country in your opening game because Houston is
a road.
Top 25 team. And then Texas Tech, your week 2 opponent, your home opener is number 12.
Yeah.
So you got 12 and 23 right out of the gate. And then it gets easier from there.
And then
there.
You go play your schedule.
So it's just, it's fun to look at this. I don't know how to feel about certain teams in here.
I do not see a group, the highest, most votes from a group of 16, Boise State, which would put them 28th if you continued ranking them.
Okay, so Oregon's going to start with a team
Clemson,
just outside the top 25.
Clemson, the most votes, not in the poll. Florida next, then Boise State.
Okay.
And Clemson was very close to Missouri, who was 25th.
Missouri is 20. My guy, Eli.
Your boy, Eli.
My guy, Eli.
I want to see that T-shirt at some point this season.
I burned it. It's gone. Just kidding. I do have it somewhere in a drawer. I don't know where it is. That is your top 25. So here, let's do this fun exercise. Now, every year, it's not as compelling for the teams in the back end of the top 25, right? Like, I give you 12 teams that fell out. Some of the teams in there, Boise State was number 25. They finished season unranked. Tennessee was number 24, unranked. Iowa State, 22. Remember, they lost their opener in Ireland.
Dublin.
Kansas State, unranked. SMU, unranked. Florida was 15th. South Carolina was 13th. Illinois, 12th. Arizona State, 11. All those teams started the year in the preseason top 25 and fell out. Here is the fun game, though, because every year this happens. And in fact, I remember people picking my team to be this last year, back to the point of replacing a lot of talent and not returning any starters. This is a very generic August segment that gets done in almost every platform that talks about college football. There will be a team in the top 10 who falls out of the top 25 this year. One of these teams will fall flat on their face, or injuries will hurt them and they'll end the season 7-5 and be outside the top 25.
There's nine SEC teams in the
Somebody's going to do it.
A couple of them are
right?
Not going to win those 50-50 games.
Here are your teams, and two of the three now have new head coaches that were in the top 10 that fell out of the top 25 last year. LSU was number 9. They even won their opener against Clemson. It felt like, here we go. Yeah. And then Clemson, speak of the devil, number 4, fell out of the top 25, 7-5 last year. And Penn State, number 2. So three teams in the top 10 last year of the preseason AP poll fell out of the top 25 at the end of the year. Who is your primary candidate this year? Do you have one? Because you know one of these teams will do it. I can't remember the exact. This is like what we do in the NFL with the new play. It's like 30 years in a row there's been four new playoff teams.
I need to
look
at schedules.
It's one of those things of the every year, like clockwork, somebody in the top 10 eventually falls
Certainly
out.
Missouri has the potential.
I'm just saying top 10, not top 20. Top 25 is easy. You know teams in top 25. Just top 10 candidates.
I would
say. So Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas, Indiana, Miami, A&M, Ole Miss, or Oklahoma.
I would say Indiana is potential because they're not going to get any credit for kicking the crap out of the first bunch of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stumble when they play real teams for the first time and there's nothing to back up, you know, somebody they played in the non-conference or giving them the benefit of the doubt. And I wonder how much the Cignetti has created. Look, this guy's not being respectful of, you know, what college football is all about. Mm. I could see that happening real quick.
Okay.
Who else we got in the top 10?
My primary candidate. Now, the tough part with this is there are manageable non-conference
Ole Miss
games on their
could
schedule.
Happen pretty quick.
Yeah.
If they lost too much and Trinidad Chambliss doesn't have the same magic.
Has to do it all on his own.
That could go sideways real quick.
The first one that stood out to me was, and it's a coach that I'm super high on, so it's not necessarily something negative about the coach. It's Texas A&M. Texas A&M to me was a bit of a paper tiger. They beat Notre Dame early in the year, and that was a benchmark win for them. And then their SEC schedule was very manageable. They got LSU when they were a wounded animal. They got dominated defensively by Texas late in the year. They couldn't move the ball in Miami in the playoff game, albeit the weather wasn't great, but still.
They struggle with Arizona State at home week 2.
Right, you got ASU right out of the gate, so that's not a gimme in non-conference.
Then you got Will Stein
in Kentucky. Should be a win.
And you're at LSU.
You have to go 2 LSU, 2 Missouri, 2 Alabama, 2 South Carolina, and 2 Oklahoma this year.
Yeah.
And that's not counting home games against Tennessee
and Texas.
Yeah. So that's one that I could see. If Marcel Reed doesn't quite take another step, an injury or two, like that to me was, because I think schedule is a big part of this, of who you're playing and when you're playing them. Mm-hmm. Certainly of teams that could fall out of the top 25, of who might end up doing it. But it's a fun experiment because every year somebody in the top 10, and it seems unthinkable now, right? Like if I would have said a year ago at this point, Penn State's going to fire James Franklin and be outside the top 20. Like what? No, they just were in the playoff. They won a playoff game. They were in the Big Ten championship game. And then that's how it played out for them. And so, curious if anybody has other ideas. Is there another team in there, the UC being in the top 10? Maybe it's Texas again for people. Are we all in on Arch turning it around? He certainly was good in the second half of the year. Talk about difficult schedules. Yeah. Go look at Texas's schedule. You lose to Ohio State in week 2, similar to what you did last year in week 1, and then you got to go into the meat grinder of the SEC. Now, if you're in the SEC, 8-4 is good enough at the end of the year to end the season in the top 25 because you're going to get that strength of schedule benefit. But 7-5?
But like here's what you need to know. 17 of the top 25 preseason ranked teams are from the Big Ten and SEC.
They dominate the sport.
That's 2/3 of the damn poll.
It's the best two conferences, and it's not a debate. It just isn't. Yeah, the rest of the Big Ten teams in there, you had Penn State at number 18, Iowa at 22. Anybody else in the Big Ten I'm missing? I don't think so, because I gave you USC and Washington earlier. SEC, you do have LSU right there at 11. The LSU seems like such a boomer bust team for me. You could sell me on the idea of it all. Leavitt has a good year, comes together, tons of talent. The mojo, you beat Clemson in week 1, you get that mojo going. and vice versa. Like, you lose to Clemson right out of the gate, and then you're staring at that SEC schedule.
Clemson, then you get your title bust. Ole Miss.
Yes.
I think if they handle everything that goes into the Ole Miss game and they're sharp and they're, like, focused,
that'll be a huge, like, oh, okay, here we go. They mean
business.
And then
they go, okay, it's on. Right. Because then they come home and get Texas A&M the next week.
One of the problems Kiffin has had, too, the unique thing about him is that there's a little bit of DeBoer in him. Not necessarily that he always wins the big games, but there's moments where he does not have his team up for playing against inferior opponents.
Yeah.
Remember last year, the Cougs damn near went to Ole Miss and beat them. It was the week before, I want to say, they played Georgia. So it's a clear look-ahead spot.
So you get
spot,
Clemson, like, in the opener. They'll be all ready to go. That'll be at home. Death Valley will just be
unhinged.
Oh, that
place will be rocking, yeah.
Then you get La Tech at home. Sorry, you should be able to sleepwalk through that game.
I would tend to agree.
At Ole Miss, which is everything. Yes. And then I think the one, if they handle Ole Miss, then you want to see how they do coming home against Texas A&M.
Yep. Yep.
And if they're clean in that game,
you get off to a 4-0 start with wins over Clemson, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M.
Then look the hell out.
Then you're booming. You're not busting.
Then you got McNeese at Kentucky, Mississippi State at Auburn. Yeah. Yeah, they got a couple to finish. But if they start the season and look good and they're focused and they're clean, now maybe, you know, I mean, it's not like these other teams are chumps with Ole Miss, Clemson, and A&M.
No.
Like, they're going to score points. But if LSU doesn't beat themselves, they're not sloppy, they're not turning it over, they're not doing that sort of thing. I mean, you might get some 45-27 games in there.
Yes.
But if they're in control and when they get the football, they can take care of business. And then when the defense, if they can come up with turnovers, which has always been a calling card of LSU's defenses, they can get off the field when they have third down opportunities too. Then you're like, okay, Lane means business.
Yep. And it's going to be a great year for them. A couple of lingering question marks I have about some teams that show up here. Also, a streak on the other side of this, of the final rankings, the teams with the longest stretch of not finishing the season in the top 25. I was surprised by some of the teams on the list. I'm curious who people think will buck that trend. So we'll get to that coming up. The coverage of the AP poll on the Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years, guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. A little bit more college football for you, and then we'll end with some fun with audio, get you set for your night in sports next on the Fan. All right, welcome back in. Hope everybody's Monday is going great. Did you know Binary Brewing and The Fan have teamed up for the only Fan IPA available for a limited time? Taste The Fan with Binary Brewing's signature West Coast IPA. Go to Binary Brewing's Beaverton location. Ask them about their only Fan. So good, only The Fan and Binary Brewing can pull it off. The other side of the preseason AP poll, it's fun. We debate, and this is one of those, like, every time we get to this time of year, one of the debates we have is the preseason polls are stupid, we shouldn't have them, why does this exist? And I understand both sides of that coin. I certainly appreciate having a reference point, whether it's valid or not, and certainly when I give you the numbers that 12 teams in the top 25 ended the season unranked.
Yes.
I would just say have fun with it and don't take it too seriously.
Right.
My biggest criticism of it is not that preseason polls exist, because I find them fun. And we can debate it and yell about it, and it's great. My biggest thing is, after every week of the season, there needs to be a wipe clean, like, it needs to be a chalkboard where you just erase it. So you can have your preseason poll, that's fine.
Don't let that just simply,
No, if somebody lays an egg in week one and loses, but you have them ranked 11th, now we're only going to drop them to 19th, like, no, dude, get their ass out of here.
Get out of there.
Kick them out of the top 25. Yep. Like, every week it should be a wipe clean of the slate and redraw your top 25 and not do it based on what your preconceived notions
were. Now that they do this with the NCAA tournament selection, where somewhere midway through the season or before, you know, you get, they send you, if the bracket were to be seeded today,
this is how
here's
it would
your
look.
Top four seeds in each region.
Right.
So I would like to see the college football playoff committee whenever, and especially if they start expanding it, going to 16, 20, 24, whatever they number they end up on.
Right.
Somewhere, maybe the first Saturday of October. So your non-conference games have been played, and maybe one conference game. I would like to see a potential bracket.
Ooh.
Seeded today.
This is how we would seed it.
Because I think it is important for those programs and fan bases and stuff to know how has the committee viewed what you've done.
Yeah.
4 weeks into the season.
Right. Have you played anybody? Have you looked good enough? Have you? Are
so,
the numbers
strong
enough?
Indiana, like, you haven't played anybody. Maybe you've kicked the crap out of them, but the committee's like, eh, prove it.
Yeah, we'll put you 11th, right? Like, I'm not going to rank you number
one. If you want to start to see, yeah, or a team that maybe is 2-2, but they played a gauntlet so far. Both those two losses came down to field goals at the end.
Yeah, a la Notre Dame last
but
year.
But they're seated in the back end of the bracket.
Right.
If they want to encourage the conferences to schedule better, more compelling non-conference games that TV networks would eat up, if you want more money out of your TV networks moving forward as well, that's where I think they're like, quit giving us this crap non-conference.
Yes, I agree with you completely.
Are you going to agree to play, you know, no more FCS schools and at least one, if not two, Power Four schools?
Yeah. I think as long as we have fun with it and then have the context of ranked wins should be counted as ranked wins against teams at the end of the year. Like, when it comes time to debating resumes and what is your strength. If Oregon State is to beat Houston in week one, let's just use that as an example. Houston comes in at number 22 in the AP poll. I don't think Oregon State's going to win that game. I think Houston's going to be pretty good this year, but you never know. Crazier things have happened. You win that game, and let's say Houston then crumbles and their season falls apart. Like, that doesn't count the same way as a ranked win does, as opposed to Boise's in it when you beat them later in the year and they end the season ranked 13th. That's a ranked win for me. So as long as there's just a tinge of context, I'm completely fine with the AP poll. I like the numbers next to the teams. Call me an idiot, but it's fun when you turn your TV on and it's number 12 versus number 21. Like, it just feels like it's
part
more
of it's
important.
Marketing,
like,
no
it's
question.
Marketing for sure. And I also, like, I'm a Duck fan who is very appreciative of where the program is at right now. I've seen a lot of highs and I've seen a lot of lows, and I followed the program my entire life. I remember it being a very big deal in years where you would crack the top 20 when I was a kid. And you get, like, win a couple of games early in the season, you start 3-0, or the year they beat Michigan in the Lightning Strikes game, and you're like, dude, we're right in the top. Like, you move up. It's just, that was a very big deal. And so it'll always mean something to me. I don't think we need to get rid of it. I just think it needs context, and we need to wipe our slates clean every week. Those are my two asks. This is the other side of it. The poll that matters the most is where you finish the season ranked, not where you start the season ranked, because that don't matter. This was surprising to me. If I were to throw at you, and this is not counting like FCS teams and, you know, we're not going that far down. And currently in the Power Four.
What Power Four or?
Just the Power Four.
Just the Power Four.
Big 10, ACC,
okay.
Big 12,
so not
SEC.
Mountain West,
not a Mountain
MAC,
West. Nope, none of
American.
That. Just in the Power Four
Sun
conferences.
Sun Belt.
The team with the longest drought finishing the season unranked. What would your guess be?
Oh, boy.
It is, I'll give you a, it is
Boston College.
That is a really good guess. Boston College is fourth on this list. They have 18 consecutive years Boston College has ended the season unranked. They are fourth. There are three teams with more than them. When you hear it, you'll know it. Vanderbilt would have been this guess forever.
Yeah, but
Indiana would have been this guess forever.
I'm trying to think. Like, Wake Forest, but they had a season
not
that
on the list.
Long ago.
Yeah.
Like, came out of nowhere. Virginia?
Virginia was in the ACC title game last year.
Right.
They damn near went to the playoff. They're really high on their team again this year, too.
Finished unranked
the Cavaliers
at the
good.
End of the
Maybe?
Season.
Yes.
There's got to be some Big 12 teams in there.
There actually is not on this list. It is a lot of Big 10 and ACC, to give you a hint.
Ooh.
Now, how new to the Big
Rutgers.
10 or the ACC? Rutgers is not. Yes, Rutgers is number three. They are 19 consecutive years Rutgers has ended the season.
Because they've had things where they're supposed to be good, and they had the running back who's bear now and some other stuff, and then it never pans out.
So you got number three and four. I'll give you five through eight are Maryland at 15 years, Nebraska at 13 years, Duke at 12 years, which is ironic because they won the ACC last year, but we're not ranked in the top 25.
I don't think it's Purdue because Jeff Brohm was there, and that parlayed him back to Louisville.
This is the interesting. It is Purdue.
Oh.
It is Purdue. I would have said the same thing.
I would have thought he had 1 year where they would finish like 9-3 and they were 24th or something.
Let me pull up, because they've definitely had years where they've gotten off to good starts or they've pulled off an upset. Like, I remember them beating Ohio State.
Uh-huh.
Who was the kid who had the cancer who passed away? I'll never forget that
game.
And that moment and the crowd getting behind it and all that. But then I'm assuming their seasons just must crumble. I didn't follow Purdue football that closely. They must have
Nobody
just
does.
crumbled. Yeah, Brom, the best finish Brom ever had was in the regular season, was 8-4.
Oh, okay.
And then he won a bowl game to get to 9 wins in 2021, and they did not end the season ranked that year. So Purdue is number one on the list.
All right,
this list
now
at 22.
It's got to be another ACC team.
It is an ACC team. This one I would have never guessed in a million years. Purdue, you would have gotten a guess out of me. This one I would not have guessed.
Syracuse?
It is not. It is a newcomer to the conference.
Cal.
Cal is number two on this list. They have not ended the season ranked in the top 25 in 19 years.
Wow.
19 years. I don't know why. I would have figured at some point in there was, I guess now that you think about it, we're that far in the rearview mirror. Because I'm going to like Tedford days. Jared Goff didn't have a year where they were in the top 25. I know the number, like the wins and losses didn't necessarily get to where
we thought.
Well,
they could have finished 9-3 in the old Pac-12 and been left out.
Right.
Because the three losses would have been to Oregon and USC and whoever.
But they had Tedford had them running for a while, but then I think back Tedford
they
was gone.
Number two one time.
Oregon State beat them.
Yeah.
Oregon State knocked them off in Cal. They had years where they were the year
so
Oregon.
So they were number two. Yeah. Either I'm showing my age because I think it's 12 years ago and it was 25 years ago.
That was the last time they ended the season in the top 25. That was 2006.
Wow.
They started the season number 14. They got all the way up to number two. Oregon State beat them. I think that was 2006. They ended the season ranked 14th as well. They have not. That was the last time they ended the season
in
the top
25.
Isn't that remarkable? Crazy. So if I were to ask you, because to me it's a pretty easy guess, Cal is the answer here. Like if we're picking one of these teams to end their streak, would it be Cal? Because I'm actually pretty high on Cal this year.
It's just a matter of how much newness, when does everything get settled for Tosh Lapoy and all that stuff.
Yeah, they got the quarterback back again this year.
The ACC's not a gauntlet.
There's no, it is not.
A couple of teams that you have to, and I don't know how many of them are. I haven't looked at their schedule.
Right. There's not a ton ranked in the top 25. I know they open with UCLA in their first game. That's kind of a barometer game for me.
That's one of those games. Isn't it a late night? Or is it
Pac-12
like Friday
after
or
dark.
Something?
It's a Saturday night, week one, 7:30 kick, I believe.
If I'm still awake and coherent after all of the college football that day, that's one of those curiosity games. Like, okay, what are these guys dealing with?
Yep, they do
same
not.
Same thing about the Minnesota-Mississippi State game we were talking about.
Yeah, it's the same thing. The Big Ten, bottom of the Big Ten versus the bottom of the SEC.
Yeah.
It's funny you brought that up because our guy Pate actually argued on his show. He was doing the Big Ten versus SEC debate. And he was like, if you want an actual barometer, that's it right there. Because everybody says the strength of the SEC is more challenging. Well, Mississippi State's a hard place to go play.
Mississippi State's probably picked to finish no higher than
12. If you go get worked by Minnesota, does that tell you that the bottom of the Big Ten is harder than the bottom of the SEC? It's funny.
And Minnesota is typically a 4-5 team in, then they win
non-conference games.
In the non-conference to be bowl eligible. Because I think they have some absurd, like, 9-game bowl winning streak or something.
One of those random stats that shows up and you're like, what? Huh? That doesn't make any sense. Cal opens with UCLA. That is on week one. It's 7:30 on ESPN, so it is true Pac-12 after dark.
Oh, give
I'm
it
sure
to
Rod
me.
Gilmore is going to pop out of a booth and start talking nonsense.
So I'll be
to
able
you.
To catch that one because that'll be, we wrap up, it's Fan Appreciation Week then for Labor Day weekend for the Hops.
That is a 7:30 kickoff.
Which means
time.
It'll be a 7:47 kickoff.
Yes. dude, the other game will run late.
So
it'll start on the U.
I will get home middle of the first quarter to take that one in.
Seeing Nico versus JKS, two fun new coaches.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a fun game for week
there's
one.
A
I'm
lot
excited
of, there's
for that
a
one.
Lot of great selling points for that.
As we wrap up our college football conversation, I did enjoy this one. One last bit of audio for you, and then we'll have some fun with audio in the last segment. Don't you worry. Hopefully I don't get fired. We talked about Kyle Whittingham last week. He says he doesn't hate Ohio State. Would that help you if I hated Ohio State? He's getting dragged for all this stuff. I think Ryan Day saw the opportunity and said, you don't hate us enough? How about we change the way we operate because we hate you more?
It first came to me from our administration as an idea, and we talked about it. I had long conversations about it. The traditions at Ohio State here are significant and very, very strong and something that we all respect. And what we don't want to do is, do anything that's going to disrupt any of those traditions. But when we look at all the things that go on that weekend, the way things have changed, there's some things that we thought about. And I think the first thing was, if we want to keep that game, the much of that game, the focus on the game. And the more distractions we have, there's already enough distractions during that week. And so this was just one more thing that we felt like we could move. Then when we started to look at just, you know, the way that college football is now, you know, recognizing seniors, you know, someone like Brandon Ennis is a little, maybe a little different than Earl Little. And so you know, we thought about maybe moving it up a week. And then we said, well, why don't we just recognize all the seniors at the beginning of the year, let them know how much we appreciate everything they've done, and then kind of, you know, move on with the season. And sort of a different way to look at it. And so what we did is we brought it to the seniors to see what their take on it was, because we didn't want to do it without – you know, their support. And I wasn't sure what to expect. They all were nodding quickly and said, yeah, I think that's a great idea. So we went with it. And, you know, we think it's going to allow us opportunity to really, you know, kind of recognize them early in the season and then focus on the games.
I love that they are going about changing. I mean, how long has that tradition been in place at Ohio State? Probably 100 years that they've done a senior week thing.
However,
do you like this idea, moving it to before the year?
I think it's a great idea.
More than senior day? Because they get the game is in Columbus this year, so that is senior day for them against Michigan.
No, I actually like this, your first home game of the season, because also, say you have some senior, you know, they get hurt or something happens, whatever.
Not in uniform.
You can celebrate them the whole season, and maybe some guys that, plus you're also more likely to, because usually, like for basketball, college basketball, it's tradition on senior day, all the seniors start, even the walk-ons or whatever.
Sure.
North Carolina has this tradition. Doesn't matter. Kid's been the equipment manager. They suited him up his senior year as the walk-on or whatever. He plays until the first media timeout.
Tinkle did that a couple years ago to Oregon State.
Remember that's a common practice. It's tough when you get to that point in the season, you know,
you've got your practice players or whatever
like that. But the first game out of the chute, Even if you are playing, you know, some, you know, the Clemson LSU game or whatever, like your seniors get the first series, and you can practice all throughout summer to prepare them for that.
Yeah,
I think this makes a lot more sense, and then the rivalry can be about the rivalry.
Just the rivalry. I just found it funny that after a week of everybody criticizing Whittingham for not taking it seriously enough, Ryan Day announces, we're changing the way we do senior week. We take the game
so
seriously.
I hope for Whittingham's sake that, one, Bryce Underwood can
he's got a quarterback
be a serviceable
who can throw.
Quarterback, but they go out and kick the crap out of him.
It would be pretty funny in year one if they go into Columbus
so
and win.
That
would be pretty
Kyle
funny.
Whittingham.
I do, too. I'm definitely rooting for him in that rivalry for sure. And Ohio State's a bigger threat to Oregon, so let's go, Kyle. Why not? Let's wrap up the show with some fun with audio. We do have a bit of news out of the NBA that just came across the wire, so we'll wrap it up there next on The Fan. All right, we'll have some fun with audio in a moment. Before we do that, it's been a fun little show today, everybody. Thanks for being along for the ride. I don't know if anybody alive is surprised by this.
Oh, what you got?
Because sometimes we learn the lesson the hard way. What matters the most is how much money you got. This looks like, at least on the outside, in another example of that for me. There is a massive investigation looming in the NBA. There's a massive trade this offseason.
I suggested last week Silver should be on the phone to
every
his
day.
Law firm.
What
Where's
are we
my
doing?
Damn report?
What are we
Where
doing?
Is my damn report?
The trade of Kawhi Leonard is still up in the air.
Well.
Kind of. Maybe not. Now, not anymore.
Here's your report.
Here's your report. And I love that these come out from sources close to both sides are indicating to us. Here is what the report reads, and that is, quote, the NBA has found no evidence showing that Clippers owner Steve Ballmer funneled money through team sponsors to pay Kawhi Leonard in order to circumvent the salary cap, according to three people with knowledge of discussions between the two sides in recent days. Instead, the NBA is focused on whether the team's introduction of Leonard to team sponsors constitutes a violation of the league's rules prohibiting salary cap circumvention. The league is examining whether the Clippers are guilty of failure to supervise employees, though it is unclear what specific rule the team would have violated or what the penalties would be, the two sources said. So they're going to get off scot-free?
Ballmer's lawyers are better than the league's lawyers.
Nothing's going to happen here? Is that what you're telling me? Is that what you're telling me right now? Nothing's going to happen after all of that for a year. Pablo Torre's out here winning journalistic awards for his excellence in reporting on this. And well, the NBA is going to say,
my question.
Couldn't find anything.
Who's Pablo talking to that the NBA can't talk to or won't tell them the same thing?
That's a great question. I don't know. I have not dove into all the Pablo material. You just read from the outside. You know, I'm not diving. I don't care that much about this story. The Clippers haven't done anything.
Again, like, which whatever. Led to my next question was, why doesn't the NBA hire Pablo Torre in their security department?
Well, they don't hire Pablo Torre because Steve Ballmer's the richest owner in the NBA, and they don't want to piss him off. Dare I say, the guy who just built a $3 billion stadium with his own money, you don't want to get on his bad side, NBA? The Clippers are an irrelevant franchise, and he is the only thing propping them up with his unlimited buckets of cash.
Well,
who do you not want to go after?
Now. He's got to pay off the debt or whatever. He's not going anywhere.
I know. This is how these things usually work. Maybe there actually is no evidence. I don't know. I don't know enough about the story to opine either way. That is the least surprising thing I've seen in a while. Couldn't find anything. This is the.
At least he's smart to understand. I mean, somebody is like, okay, this is, you know, we can have no record of conversations.
Yes. Clearly had enough to hide, wipe their tracks clean. Nothing to see here, NBA. It's all good. All right. From that note, let's end with this. Hopefully this one doesn't get me in trouble. This shouldn't get me in trouble.
This was on a local news
television. This was said on television.
Yes. Now, what is this? Good Day Detroit.
Who doesn't watch Good Day Detroit
on the NBC affiliate in Detroit?
I'm a religious P1 of Good Day Detroit in the morning, okay? It's what I watch before I come in every day. And this morning, they were having a conversation about, I don't know what the word, exotic food animals, I believe, is the best way to phrase it. What kind of exotic animals would you be willing to eat or not eat? And this is what happened on Good Day Detroit.
And again, they're ice fishing because everything is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking for fat in the beaver.
Yeah.
The beaver is the beaver is the most sought after.
It is. The
Ryan, do you think you could eat beaver? It's fat and then it's meat.
I'm so glad he lost it.
So good.
They all got sick.
It's so honest.
They all got sick after this.
Diseased animals.
Oh god. She's dead serious, by the way.
Dead serious.
She's following the story.
Dead serious.
I don't know anything about this show, Dina, but you're really funny. You are a really funny gal.
So if she knew what she was doing,
hell, props to her,
and props for keeping
it on the rails, because that's not easy to
awesome.
Do. When the giggle factory takes over, it's not easy to hold things together and hold on to the reins and having some time
if
to time on the show.
She understood what she was doing for comedic effect.
Yes,
that's brilliant.
If not, it's also hilarious.
It's hilarious that she
only
is
one guy
like,
got the joke.
So focused on the story, not understanding,
just reading the prompter,
why he's losing it.
Have you ever eaten beaver?
I have not.
I have not either. Is it good?
I have no idea.
Why don't people do that in rivalry games with Oregon State? We get that all the time. People cook
the
duck, we'll eat the duck.
Well,
why don't we do that to the beaver?
I don't know where you would find...
That's a good question.
Butcher quality.
Evidently, there's a lot of fat on it.
Okay.
I like fat on my meat.
Well, yes, duck is very fatty.
Yes.
You know, that's part of the thing.
Duck is delicious.
Even though you can't have foie gras in Portland anymore. Right. But God, if I ever find the people. Man.
So good. I'm going to try that. Next Civil War, let's bring it back. I'm going to be out in front of Reese or cooking some beaver. Let's make this rivalry real again.
I don't know.
Real
Would
again,
it be better?
It.
Like,
throw it on
is
the
that
grill.
Something? Yeah, I put on the Traeger and smoke for a long time, like brisket, to like get it. Or do
right,
I
you
need
want to slow cook it? Is
or
it fast
do I
cook?
Need? Is that something I need to like sear?
High temp.
High temp.
Quick cook.
Is it something I need to braise like buffalo?
How do you like your beaver?
Okay.
I mean, it's too easy. It's just it's
I know.
Right there. I can't not
seeing if you could, you know, keep it together. You're getting me into trouble. You're not the one that's going to get fired. It's going to be me.
Hey, that aired on Good Day Detroit. That's an award-winning television program right there, okay?
I wonder how many local Emmys they have.
That'd be
in the
funny
trophy
to actually
case
look. That'd be funny to look
for
up.
Good Day Detroit.
Can we give them one for that? Because that
should
was solid. I'd give them an Emmy for that. You get an Emmy out of my book, Good Day Detroit. Great stuff. There you go. What a show. What a show. What a show. Lots going on over the weekend. We talked about all of it. We had Ryan Harlan on covering Oregon State. Really good stuff from him on an update on camp. We had a player get arrested over the weekend and a couple of guys show back up from the 50-year eligibility rule. So that was great. Go check that 1051thefan.com. We talked Damian Lillard. We yelled about Damian Lillard. Kurt Cignetti's scheduling.
It's yeah, a very shut
hot
up, Kurt.
Contentious show today, but that's good. We like that.
Ducks are number two.
Nobody.
Nobody's giving you
nobody,
a chance.
Nobody, man. I see you, AP poll. Not
eight
number one, huh?
Player, 14 first place votes.
Only 14 of you, huh? I'm going to write down the names of the others. I remember. People don't forget, everybody.
It's okay. He's going to go find those 14 voters, and they're going to be on the show the next 3 weeks.
Don't worry. The poll that matters is the dirty poll, and it starts on Thursday. We'll have some fun with that, going team by team in the rollout. That will do it for us, folks. Thank you so much for being a part of our Monday. Again, if you missed any of the show, go check the podcast, 1051thefan.com, at 1051thefan on Twitter, and at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Last day without Sprague. He's back on Wednesday. The firm of Harris and Moran is next. Listen to 105.1 FM and the Fan.